Hello, Twins fans. This is John Swole with yet another interview with the player from the Twins' wonderful past. Today, we get to spend some time with Dave McCarty. Dave was the Twins' first-round pick in 1991 and played for the Minnesota Twins from 1993 to 1995 before being traded to the Cincinnati Reds. Dave went on to play for the San Francisco Giants, Kansas City Royals, Tampa Bay Devil Rays, Oakland A's, and the Boston Red Sox before calling it a career after 11 seasons in the big leagues. Let's see what Dave has to say. Dave, from what I've read, you were born in Houston, Texas, and you attended Sharpston High School, but I also read someplace that you grew up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Is there any truth to that?
No, I was born and raised in Houston.
Okay. What sports did you enjoy playing when you were growing up?
Baseball, basketball, football. Those are really the main ones.
Okay. You ended up attending Stanford. Can you share with us how you ended up there?
Sure, yeah. I was actually kind of surprised to end up there. Growing up in Texas, I always assumed that, like a lot of the top ball players at the time in Texas would go on and go to the University of Texas and play there. But then got recruited by Stanford, went out there on my trip, and saw how gorgeous the weather was and how beautiful the campus was, and then the quality of the education, and it was just something I couldn't pass up. It was too great an opportunity.
Did you end up getting a scholarship there?
I did, yes.
And that was for baseball, I assume?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, at Stanford in 1999, you had a monster year hitting .420, and I think you were named the National Player of the Year. What do you remember about that season?
It seemed like that season, everything clicked. I didn't seem to have any kind of prolonged slumps. I was seeing the ball really well, and had a great season.
Yeah, you really did. The Minnesota Twins drafted you in the first round, third overall pick in 1991. How did you feel about being chosen by the Minnesota Twins?
I was thrilled. Especially once I got there and was able to really, live in Minneapolis and experience the lifestyle there. It's a sleeper town. A lot of people, certainly at the time, didn't really know how nice a place was and is.
Yeah. You ended up signing with Minnesota within 2 weeks, I think, and you were on your way. Can you tell us about those negotiations and what kind of bonus you may have received?
I remember it taking longer than that, and it was really more because the guys ahead of me at 1 and 2, Brian Taylor and Mike Kelly, took quite a while to kind of sign, and I think Minnesota didn't know where I would fall then in the kind of hierarchy of bonuses, and I ended up getting, I want to say it was $390,000, I think. And I really was anxious to sign and get started, but the process got drawn out because of that.
Okay. Your stay in the Twins minor league system was relatively short before you made your major league debut on May 17, 1993 at the Metrodome against the Yankees as an outfielder. What do you remember about your call-up and your first big league game?
I remember just being totally thrilled when I was told I was going up to the major leagues. It actually surprised me a little because I didn't expect them to call me up as soon as they did.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first game was just, I was on cloud nine. I mean, it was incredible. I remember at my first at bat, I worked into a full count off of Jimmy Key. The runners were moving. I ended up hitting the ground ball to the second baseman. The runners advanced and got a standing ovation for that. So it was a very thrilling and incredible experience.
Yeah. What What was the actual process of you finding out that you got the call to the big leagues? Was that kind of an interesting story, or?
I got called into the manager's office and he said, "Yeah, hey, you're going to the big leagues." I wish I had a really cool story, but I don't.
No, that's not a problem. You played on some really, I don't know how else to say it, some bad Twins teams during your stay in Minnesota from 1993 to 1995, but you were not able to win a full-time job. Do you think that manager Tom Kelly gave you a fair shot?
Looking back on it, I think there were a couple factors that went into me not succeeding by playing to the level the Twins expected, and certainly to the level that I expected. And number one was, I think I ultimately, looking back on it, I got called up to the big leagues really before I was ready to be there. It certainly didn't help having TK there when he was really tough on not just me, but all the young guys who came up, Pat Mears and Stachowiak and Marty Cordova and, Papa Holmes was there. It was not an environment where it was easy for young guys to thrive. And I think it certainly hurt things. And unfortunately, in baseball, you get labeled. And whether it's good or bad, I mean, there were guys towards the end of my career who were starting players, and you look at them, and, guys on other teams, nobody understood how a guy had a starting job. But if you're labeled as a starting player, or a name player, and the GM and the manager throw you out there and you don't perform, they don't lose their jobs for it. If a GM and a manager take a chance on a guy who's labeled as a bench guy or has spent a lot of years in the minor leagues, and then they throw you in the lineup every day and you don't perform, they can lose their jobs. So if you get labeled as a bench guy, it doesn't really matter what you do when you go back down to AAA, and then if you tear the cover off the ball, or if you're a pitcher and you go down there and you just deal. As soon as you get called back up, you sit there and rot on the bench for a week without seeing it at bat, and then all of a sudden it's, here, go pitch it against the closer, go get them. And, you're not going to succeed in situations like that.
Yeah, that's a hard situation for everybody. What was...
It took me years to learn how to really be a bench player and to be able to, have some success coming off the bench.
What was Tom Kelly like to play for? He seems to now he's with the club quite a bit. It's kind of a special advisor, and he seems to have mellowed a lot.
Yeah, I think at the time, this is all in hindsight. Looking back, I'm sure it was tough for him too. They were getting all of us young players coming up, and it was getting that was causing guys that he really liked, who he had kind of come up through the minor leagues with, and then won a couple world championships with.
Sure.
Those guys were getting pushed out by the young guys that were coming up, and I'm sure that had to be hard for him. But at the same time, he certainly didn't make it easy for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think. A lot of guys struggled because of it. You look at all the high picks who came up who didn't succeed. And I think that was a major factor in it. But that being said, I've actually heard that he's mellowed quite a bit. And, I'm sure he looks back on it probably and would have a different perspective now than he did at the time.
Yeah, he's. I get to go down the spring training every year. We spend a couple months in Florida and Fort Myers, and so I get to hang out at the ballpark quite a bit. And he's out there all the time. He's, he spends all his time now working with the young guys. It seems really different. Really different.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. And I'm sure. We all change as we age. He's probably a lot more accepting of the young guys now. And, like I said, that had to be tough for him to see guys' careers ending or getting traded away or not signed back. guys that were really close to him and really special to him, that had to be tough when those guys were getting displaced.
Sure. In June of 1995, the Twins traded you to the Cincinnati Reds. How did you view that trade at the time?
At the time, I was very happy about it, actually. I had talked with Terry Ryan previous to that and had asked him for a trade. I realized, the writing was on the wall there. TK was not going to play me. He didn't want me playing for him, and quite frankly, I didn't want to play for him either. And, I think it was best for everybody that I get a fresh start somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Tom Kelly was, a longtime baseball guy, came up, been in baseball his whole life. Do you think the fact that you came from Stanford played a part in that?
I certainly heard about it enough. It's remarks that he had made in the papers and things like that. I think he was more an old school baseball guy. I didn't appreciate that high round picks were getting these big signing bonuses and making it to the big leagues quickly. He was more in favor of the old school approach. We were oil and water. We didn't go together in that sense.
And things like that happen all the time.
They do. I mean, and it's not just there. It happens with every team. A player and a manager might not click. And it just doesn't work for whatever reason.
Yeah. After leaving Minnesota in 95, you spent time in the organizations of the Reds, the Giants, the Mariners, Tigers, the A's, the Royals, the Devil Rays, and finally with the Red Sox, where you finished your 11-year big league career, but yet you were never able to get more than 300 at-bats in a single season. How frustrating was that for someone that had so much baseball success to that point?
Well, it was very frustrating. I think getting rushed to the big leagues and then struggling a little bit there, it hurt my confidence. And it took me a while to get that back, really, once I was away from the Twins. And once I had my confidence back, I was ready to succeed and would go ahead to AAA and tear the cover off the ball and then get called up and just rot on the bench. And then finally, in 2000, Kansas City gave me an opportunity where I could succeed and show what I could do. And, in a pretty limited number of at-bats, I put up some good numbers. And that got me my only two-year deal, guaranteed deal in my career. And, I thought after that year that, I showed enough that I would get more at-bats. Instead, I ended up getting fewer at-bats. And really kind of struggled that year until at the end of the year, Mike Sweeney, we got into a brawl with the Tigers, and he got suspended for a little while and tweaked something in that. So he was out for, a little over a week, and I got to play every day. And I was getting 2, 3, 4 hits a day. I ended up getting my average up to 250 for the year in pretty short order. There were flashes like that when I would get to play and I would do well. But the problem is, as a bench guy, you get a lot of those mop-up at-bats where, you haven't had an at-bat in a week, especially in the American League, which is where I spent the vast majority of my career. You don't get the double switches and it's been pinch-hitting opportunities. So if you don't start, there are a lot of times where, you'll go quite a while and just rot. And it makes it tough to stay fresh and have your timing. So even though, when you would get a couple starts, you'd get your head to start to feel better, then all of a sudden you'd have the long dry spells where, you get 2 at-bats in a week, and, it's tough to have success there, and it really, drags your numbers down.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was really surprised and disappointed that I didn't get more at-bats after that year, after 2000. And then 2001, I had fewer at-bats. Numbers went down. 2002, I had even fewer at-bats and was struggling. And then finally, they released me. It was disappointing. But then, getting to experience what I did with the Red Sox and have some success there
You mentioned the word confidence, and you know, the Twins, you know, as fans, that we want to see the young guys come up and see what they can do, and yet, you know, it seems like some of the teams hold back some of these guys, and then you see some guys come up, and very few of them are successful right off the bat. They seem to need to be sent down to the minors several times before something finally seems to click, and they become that consistent everyday player. How big a part does confidence play?
Well, confidence is huge. I mean, you know, a lot of guys, you get to the big leagues, and all of a sudden you're playing with and against you know, these guys that you've idolized. Yep. You know, there I was, a kid who had grown up in Texas, going up against the Rangers and facing Nolan Ryan. You know, I mean, the guy was one of my heroes. You know, I'm out there in the same outfield in 94. I remember one time, you know, we had Abe Winfield, Kirby Puckett, and me out there in the same outfield. You know, it takes you a while to really get to the point where you realize, yeah, hey, I do belong here. You know, this guy, even though he's some famous person, is just another guy just like me. And it takes you a while to get over that. And I think that's one of the reasons that it takes guys a while to really succeed. It takes a while to realize that you do belong.
Do you think that if a player gets called up too soon, that he may never achieve what was in store for him, you know, considering if he would have stayed in the minors longer? You hear about guys in baseball history that, you know, if they have such high expectations for them, and all of a sudden they get called up and they're not successful right away, and they just never reach the stardom that was predicted for them.
Oh, absolutely. You know, especially having gone through it, then when I was with Kansas City, you know, and they didn't have the big budget, so they kept hoping to find the solution internally. And I saw, you know, in the you know, 2+ years, was it 3 spring trainings I was there every year, where, you know, they'd have some kid who had had a great year in Double A, whether he was a hitter or a pitcher, and, you know, hadn't had any time in Triple A to seize him, and, you know, he'd had a good spring training, and, you know, boom, they'd rush him to the big leagues, and he'd make the team, and it was just disastrous. You know, year after year, I saw that happening to guys, and, you know, I think you really do a guy a disservice by bringing him to the big leagues really before he's ready. You can cause really irreparable harm versus leaving a guy in the minor leagues too long. All it does is makes him hungrier. It's not going to do any harm for him. You know, like the Braves did with Ryan Plesko. I mean, he sat in AAA for, you know, really a year longer than he needed to, but because of that, when he got there, he was hungry. He knew he belonged there. He didn't have any confidence issues, and he had a great career.
You ended up playing for seven different big league teams. Where did you enjoy playing the most, and why?
Without a doubt, it was Boston, and really just because, you know, we won the World Series there. The fans were just incredible. It's really a whole different level there. The excitement in the air. You know, just to put it into perspective, I live out in the San Francisco Bay Area, played for the Giants, played for the A's. Shortly after my career was over and while I was playing for the Red Sox, I had more people in the Bay Area recognize me for being a Red Sox player than being a Giants and A's player combined, including when I was playing for those teams.
Really?
It's just a whole different level.
Yeah.
So that was where I enjoyed it the most.
What, Fenway Park, you know, has this mystique about it. It's been around forever, but yet it's really an extremely old ballpark. Is it, you know, with the Green Monster out there, is it really as much fun to play out there as everybody says it is?
Well, it is. You know, it's baseball history. You're sitting there in the same dugout that Ted Williams was in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that Babe Ruth was in. You know, it's just incredible history there. I mean, I liked all the old ballparks, you know, old Yankee Stadium, before they got Jacobs Field. But just, you know, the history of it and the ownership has done a great job of really maximizing what they can do with the stadium as far as, you know, adding more seating, making these facilities better for the players, as far as batting cages and weight rooms and everything. You know, would a new stadium be nice? Yeah, you know, it would be great, I'm sure. But, you know, the atmosphere there and the history of it just make it a great place to play.
In 2004, you were part of the world champion Red Sox. What single memory from that season do you cherish the most?
I think just when we won it. I mean, it was just incredible. It was certainly like nothing else I ever experienced. And then when we had the parade, we were in the duck boats, the amphibious vehicles, going through the city, and it was just, the noise was deafening. I never experienced anything like that and probably never will.
That's an amazing experience, I'm sure. During that same 2004 season, you appeared in 3 games as a Red Sox pitcher. What do you remember about those games?
Well, I mean, that was something that you know, I pitched a little bit in the minor leagues, just in some mop-up games, and, you know, being a right-handed pinch hitter, I faced, you know, most of the lefty relievers, you know, in the American League, and, you know, I knew that I could do every bit as well as a lot of them. You know, certainly not the top-notch guys, but, you know, there's a saying in baseball, and I think it's very true, if you're left-handed and breathing, you've got a shot.
Yeah.
And towards the end of the 2003 season, I went to the, well, actually, back before that, in 2001 and 2002, I was the emergency pitcher for the Royals. It just never happened where, you know, we had a blowout that they needed before.
Mm-hmm.
And then towards the end of 2003, I approached the Red Sox and said, look, guys, this is something I'd love to give a try. Let me throw a bullpen for you. So the coaches went out there. Gio Epstein, the GM, was after we were in Baltimore towards the end of the year, and I threw a bullpen for him, and they said, yeah, you know, there's something there. So they signed me back for 04, had me go to spring training with pitchers and catchers and work out with them, and, you know, got some innings there, and, you know, got to get into some games and had some success. I really wish I had the opportunity to do more of it, because I think I could have done a good job at it.
So something that you really enjoyed then. Did you give any thought? Go ahead.
What's that?
Did you give any...
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, did you give any thoughts at all to maybe, you know, turning into a pitcher later in your career?
I probably would have given it a shot if somebody was interested. I think a lot of times baseball people too, again, we get back to the situation where if somebody gives you a shot and you don't do well, they can lose their job over it. So, you know, something unconventional like that, you know, it's going to take somebody to really be willing and able to think outside of the box. I mean, you had Brooks Kieschnick do it as well. I don't see any reason why you couldn't have a guy who is one of your utility players who, you know, is also good enough to pitch.
Mm-hmm.
It always killed me when, you know, the pitchers wouldn't do well, they'd struggle, the bullpen would get chewed up. But instead of sending one of the pitchers out who hadn't done well, what would they do? The team says, well, we need the 12th pitcher for a while, and it's one of the utility guys who may have been doing a perfectly fine job who gets shipped off to AAA or released or something. And I think that would be a great solution for that problem.
Yeah, that happens all the time. You did not get a chance to play in a 2004 World Series. How tough was that to just sit and watch?
It was very tough. I think when they got Doug Mankiewicz at the trading deadline, clearly something else was going to happen because they didn't have any need for all three of us in Mankiewicz, Kevin Millar, and me. So I did have it confirmed that, you know, there was something else that was going to happen. So clearly either Millar Mm-hmm. So, you know, you were left in a situation where you had three first basemen. You know, clearly they were going to keep a right-handed hitting guy and a left-handed hitting guy. And unfortunately for me, I was the guy with the smallest contract, and I was the odd man out.
Yeah, that has to hurt. Did you end up getting a ring?
Oh yeah. No, I was at all the games. You know, I was making batting practice and grounders and everything. In case somebody got hurt and they needed to, you know, to make a roster move there. There were several of us who were, you know, with the team the whole time, and you know, being there the whole year, I still felt like I was part of the team, and you know, it definitely was tough not being able to get out on the field for it, but you know, it was still a great experience.
I bet. I watch Kevin Millar on MLB. He seems like a really unusual guy. Was he as funny or as strange as he seems to come across on television?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's a funny guy. He's always up to some sort of a prank or you know, keeping everybody loose. So he's a great guy to hang out with. And a good teammate.
You ended up leaving the game of baseball as an active player after the 2005 season at the age of 35. How tough was that?
You know, that was the first year when I went to spring training where my kids were getting a little older, and they said, look, Dad, you know, we don't want you to go. So it was tough to you know, to go away from them, but, you know, yet again, and go to spring training that year. And then when the Red Sox, they had signed John Olerud, I had to sign a 45-day clause. So if they you know, traded me or released me or something within the first 45 days of the season.
Okay.
Yeah, that year was the first year where, you know, the Kings didn't want me to go away. Like I said, the Red Sox had me sign a 45-day clause. We were getting close to that, and you know, they didn't want to have to give me a contract for that year, so they designated me for assignment. Had a deal in place to trade me to Baltimore.
Hmm.
But you know, I you know, like you mentioned earlier, I had played on some pretty bad teams in my career, and at the time, Baltimore was really bad. And I said, you know, I've played on enough bad teams, I'd rather go out on top. And I just called it a career at that point.
Yeah. You ended up going into broadcasting for several years with the Red Sox after you retired as an active player. Did you enjoy that?
I did enjoy it. That was a lot of fun. It was a great way to kind of keep my hand in the game and get to go and still, you know, see all the guys that there were still a lot of guys I had played with on the team at that point. And I really enjoyed it.
You played during the era where some of the players used steroids and human growth hormones, and now recently, you know, out in your area there, you have the situation with Melky Cabrera. What are your thoughts on the subject?
Well, I wish they had the testing when I played. I know for a fact there were guys who, you know, who passed me up. You know, who either made me a bench guy or kept me off the team because there was a guy who was using steroids or human growth hormone who made the team. You know, I think I can certainly understand why guys would do it because you know, you got to remember you're playing in Major League Baseball. There's on every Major League team, you're probably averaging 1 to 1.5 college graduates. A lot of guys playing in Major League Baseball have nothing else to fall back on. So, you know, that's their one shot. And, you know, under those circumstances, when they know a lot of other guys are using, they were going to use. And I think it hurt a lot of us who didn't.
Yeah, it's, you know, and you're hearing, you know, they're doing testing for it, but yet it's still going on. And it's kind of frustrating because, you know, I'm a longtime baseball fan. I watch, you know, the Hank Aarons and all those guys and Harmon Killebrew's play, and, you know, which was, I think, before the time that anything was being taken, and now you have somebody like Bonds or, you know, those kind of players, and you wonder, you know, if those records should even exist.
Yeah, I know. It's very unfortunate in the history of the game where you had other eras where you were able to compare players side by side based on their numbers, and then, you know, now you got to look at that era, the steroid era, and really question the numbers of guys. And, you know, I was surprised to find out towards the end of my career, there were a lot of pitchers were using, and nobody ever really seems to talk about that.
Yep.
You know, you had these guys coming out of the bullpen that were throwing 95, 98 every single night. And, you know, a lot of times I think people have the misconception that steroids are just to get guys big and bulky and strong so they can hit home runs. Well, it aided in the recovery of guys. So, you know, in July and August, you know, when it's 100 degrees out there and I'm dying out there, you know, there were guys who were feeling like it was, you know, April 10th,
and
they felt great.
Yeah.
You know, so that was one aspect of it that I, you know, till late in my career didn't even realize that one of the big benefits of the steroids is it helps guys recover so that they stay fresh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you certainly saw as soon as they started testing, a lot of these guys who were throwing, you know, 95, 98 every night, all of a sudden they're throwing 91, 92, and they're getting hurt, and,
yep.
You know, you got to look at that, too.
Yeah. Do you follow baseball today, Dave?
I do. Not as closely as I did when I was broadcasting. I mean, you know, work gets in the way of that. And, you know, certainly spending time with my family is the higher priority.
Somebody comes along and says, hey, would you like to coach or manage for us? Would you be interested in getting back in baseball?
I would always consider it. I've had several teams give me calls over the years saying, hey, you know, do you have any interest in, you know, working in the front office or coaching or anything? And it's been more in the front office rather than coaching. But the problem with it is, you know, baseball is a great game. I love it. But the lifestyle is brutal. I mean, you're gone away from your family 8 or 9 months a year. You're always on the road. And, you know, the problem with being a GM is, you know, you can, you know, say I get a job in the front office somewhere in a city that I love. Then all of a sudden a GM job opens up in some horrible town where there's no way I'm going to move my family. You know, you're left with the decision, do you just take the job and go somewhere that you don't want to be, or do you just stay where you are? So, you know, it can be a very tough lifestyle, as great as the game is and as much as I love it and would love to still be involved in it. It just, you know, it's something that maybe you would definitely take the right opportunity.
Sure.
Or possibly when my kids are a little older and, you know, don't need me around the house. Before I would get back in the game. But eventually, yeah, I would definitely consider it.
Hmm. You're currently in commercial real estate, I think, in the Oakland area. How does that compare to playing professional baseball?
Well, it's surprising. You get a lot of former athletes in commercial real estate. And I think, you know, the competitive nature of the business, you know, not knowing what kind of payday you're going to get at the end of the day. You know, there's no salary. If you do a bunch of big deals, you can make $1 million a year. And if you don't do any deals, you can work your butt off and make nothing. So I think a lot of people can't handle that sort of a structure in their job. But I've found that a lot of times athletes can. Because they come from a very similar situation, you know. Same thing with baseball. You can work your butt off, and if things go well for you, you can make a ton of money, and if it doesn't, you can make nothing.
Yeah.
My wife said, I'm lucky I have a sugar daddy. She's an author right now, and has had quite a bit of success. She's hit the New York Times multiple times with her books.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah. So she's teasing me.
What do you enjoy doing in your spare time, Dave?
I love traveling with my family. I like to play golf. I don't get to do it nearly as much as I would like. Really just spending time with my family and traveling, reading. I like cooking. Just getting to have a normal lifestyle is great. I think when you come up through baseball and you get married and have kids, when that's the only lifestyle you just don't know any better. But then when you retire from the game and you get to come home and see your family every single night and, on the weekend, I can take the kids to the pool or, take them to the park and play, you realize how much you miss out on. So really having a normal lifestyle is great.
Well, Dave, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. I really appreciate it.
Sure, thanks. It was fun.